raise serious questions about the long-term future of Adams' administration. Adams has come under fire for accepting lavish travel and other benefits from foreign campaign donors while he was running for mayor in exchange for influence over his administration. I'm Max Pringle.
Silas from Washington, D.C., thank you so much, sustaining my love. I am so appreciative, and my bare feet, I'm putting my shoes back on. Loving y'all. Thank y'all so much.
WPFW, Washington.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Parisa Neruzzi, and this is Taking Action on WPFW 89.3 FM. We come to you every Tuesday at 1, bringing the information and inspiration that you need to take action in our city. We fight displacement, save our schools and communities, stand up for justice, build our power, and hold government officials accountable. Taking Action is produced by the grassroots organization Empower DC. We welcome your feedback and your show ideas, and you can contact Empower DC at 202-234-9119 or go online to empowerdc.org and check us out. I want to say at the top of the show that we've been doing this, producing this program, Taking Action, here on WPFW for over a decade. It's been a huge opportunity to create this platform, not only for Empower DC's members and our partners, but for anyone in the DMV, in the movement, working towards economic, racial, environmental justice, and other causes that fall under and are attached to these intersectional issues. We are grateful for WPFW. We rely on WPFW. And we support WPFW, and so we're asking our listeners to help us reach our goal. We have a $500 goal this hour, very doable, and I do want to shout out everybody who's participated in the pledge drive thus far. There are several ways to give. You can go online to the website, WPFWFM.org. You can go to Cash App and donate using $WPFWFM. You can call into the station. There's a 202 line and an 800 line I'll give you here in a second. And you can text WPFWFM to the number 801-801. Again, you can text to the number 801-801 WPFWFM. So there's a lot of ways to give. I will repeat that in a little bit. But I want to start introducing my guests and getting into conversation with them while you go ahead and check out the website or pull up your Cash App. So thanks again, everybody, for keeping this critical institution of knowledge and culture, art, music, and activism alive here in DC. Thanks so much to my guests today. I'm excited to be joined by several people who've made their career doing incredible work that supports environmentalism, environmental justice, protecting our planet, bringing people together to honor and center the earth and our connection to the earth in throughout a number of different efforts. And we're excited to be talking with them in part because they have an upcoming event, Taking Nature Black, which is a conference that they are producing here coming up shortly in a couple weeks. So we want to make sure you know about it and you know about them. So I want to thank my guests, Lydia Lawrence, Jamani Overby, Mariah Davis, Sharon Dorsey, and Fred Tutman. All thank you so much for joining Taking Action today.
Thank you for having us, Barisa. We're very happy and excited to talk to WPFW's listeners about this program.
That is wonderful. And I will have you each just share a little bit about yourselves, if you don't mind. So why don't we start with you, Lydia? Because I know some of you are on staff with Nature Forward, the host of the conference. Some of you are participating as speakers at the conference or host committee members. But give us a little bit about yourself and your affiliation, Lydia. You want to start?
Yes. Well, my name's Lydia Lawrence, and I am so honored to be taking Nature Black 2025's co-chair this year with Jemani Overby. I do work for Nature Forward. I work as their director of conservation, where I oversee and lead our organization's environmental advocacy, our community science program, water quality monitoring programs, and a lot of our community outreach work in the DC metro region.
Wonderful. And we'll go to your colleague here. Jemani, do you want to jump in?
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much for having us join. I'm so excited to hop on and share more about Taking Nature Black. I'm Jemani Overby. I serve as the other co-chair for Taking Nature Black. And I also serve as the DC conservation advocate with Nature Forward. As a native Washingtonian, with 55 generations of my family in the district, it's been a full circle opportunity to be able to continue to work towards justice and outreach, engagement, education, and advocacy work on focusing on advocacy campaigns in DC.
Thank you, Jemani. And yeah, we're going to go hear a little bit about the other three guests who've joined us, and then we'll get more into the details of the conference. Mr. Fred Tutman, would love to hear from you.
Sure. So I'm Fred Tutman. I'm the Patuxent River Keeper. The Patuxent's a river in Maryland that stays entirely in the state, the longest and deepest river that stays entirely in the state. I've been its river keeper for the last 21 years. I'm also the only African-American water keeper in the United States today, although by no means the first. I think you and I before the show talked about one of the first, actually.
Yeah.
You know, our work very much is involved with working directly with communities and taking our cues from the communities that we support. And we work on environmental health and water quality issues throughout the seven counties of the Patuxent.
Beautiful. So happy to have you. Thanks so much. And Mariah Davis.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. And thank you so much for having me here today. I've been working with the organizers of Taking Nature Black for many years. And so I'm very excited to be able to participate and to be in community and in part of this conversation today. So I'm Mariah Davis. I've been working on environmental justice and clean water policy, community organizing for the last 10 years. I've had the opportunity to work locally, statewide, and at the federal level. My most recent job, I was working with the state of Maryland as the environmental justice officer with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, but I am no longer working with the state. I'm excited to share that I'll be opening a new consulting business of my own that'll be focused on policy, education, and conservation. And I'll be specifically focused on addressing food insecurity and food deserts across the state of Maryland.
Excellent, Mariah. Thank you for joining us. And Sharon.
Hello, everyone. This is Sharon Dorsey. I'm so glad to be joining y'all today. I am a Take Nature Black enthusiast. I am a first-time attendee in 2023, and I was super excited to come back for 2025 as part of the planning committee. I'm actually based in Baltimore, Maryland, so kind of DMV, kind of not, depends who you ask. But my background has been in wildlife conservation, wildlife biology, and science communication. And currently, I am also self-employed, and my current passion is connecting all people with nature through various educational experiences and natural experiences around Baltimore and DC. My company is called Sharon Nature LLC. And again, I'm here to promote Take Nature Black and get people excited about the conference in just about 3 weeks, I think, right?
Thanks for joining, Sharon. And it's great to have people who are working on these issues from a number of different vantage points, have different experience working at the grassroots level in government, you know, within organizations as consultants. So you all are covering a lot of perspectives. I wanted to ask for a little bit more background on Nature Forward, because I know some folks may know you from your earlier name and may not realize that you're actually, I think, the oldest oldest environmental organization here in our region. So Lydia, would you like to take that? Give us a little more background.
Yes, we are the oldest independent environmental organization in our region. We were founded in 1897. And back then, our priority was saving birds from being made into fancy hats for ladies. And over how many years is that? 128 years, we have evolved greatly. And our focus has expanded beyond just birds, really to looking holistically at the environment, from climate change to land use, to human health and access to green space, in addition to wildlife and biodiversity and protecting Mother Earth. And we offer a number of programs, educational, both at our nature sanctuary in Chevy Chase, as well as going into different communities all over the DMV to educate and connect people to nature and teach them how to raise their voice and be civically engaged in protecting it.
And tell us about what the name was before you changed it.
Ah, yes. We were formerly known as Audubon Naturalist Society. And our decision to change our name to Nature Forward was really part of a 15-year transition and recognizing that historically the environmental movement did not include everyone. Even though many of us have been working and protecting the earth and protecting our communities for generations. And so it was part of a broader move to really open up how we looked at the environmental movement and put it into action. And part of that was changing our name, because Audubon, derivative of John James Audubon, had some very problematic views that may not be inclusive and were not inclusive of women and BIPOC people. And we did not want to give that impression because we believe that nature needs everyone.
That's incredible that you were able to sustain an organization all this time, but actually have it evolve and, you know, become an organization that's really centering the voices of Black and Brown people and communities. So that's a beautiful thing. I don't think you mentioned it, so I'll just also say for the parents out there, they even have a summer camp. So check it out. I will see if I can get my daughter to be more of a nature.
We have a summer camp. We have a nature preschool that has an open house pretty soon. You can learn more about that and our amazing Taking Nature Black conference at natureforward.org.
So yeah, let's get into that. So you've got the conference coming up, starts on March 5th, Wednesday, March 5th, and it's the sixth time that you've done Taking Nature Black since 2016. Can you give me a little bit more about how this event came together and sort of the vision and purpose behind it? And then we'll get into the details of this year's conference.
I'm going to let my co-chair, Jemani Overby, take that one.
Thank you, Lydia. Of course. Taking Nature Black is, as you mentioned, is our sixth time having this conference. We actually have it in partnership with our sister conference, Naturally Latinos Conference. And both of these provide safe spaces for Black and Brown environmentalists to come and share, share in what they do, share in their work, and for other people to come in and learn about different organizations and what their work is they're doing. It is really, I think a lot of us that have been a part of the conference and have been a part of the environmental sector have learned that there's not a lot of spaces where Black or Brown people can come and feel comfortable about sharing in their experiences. We have different perspectives of how we look at situations, how we look at issues, how we look at the environmental justice movement. It is a very intersectional approach that we look at, because none of the issues that we are facing are in by themselves. So this was really a space for us to share and talk about what it really is to have a movement in a community of people to be able to delight in each other's experiences and share joy and share knowledge and share, you know, different projects about what we're doing and be inspired by one another. And I like that you shared that this is truly a movement. Taking Nature Black has always bought in so many different perspectives, and not just people that are environmentalists, people from all different walks of life, people that you may be nature enthusiasts and want to learn a little bit more about how they can be involved. But that is really our purpose, is to showcase diversity, equity, and inclusion. And this year's theme of our conference is reclamation and resilience. And I'll let Lydia talk a little bit more about our theme, and I'll piggyback off of her of anything too.
Yes, I think of a year ago, because Jumani and I have been planning this for over a year now, and we were sitting and thinking, wow, you know, what is it we really want to capture in our conference as we think through this theme? And we came up with reclamation and resilience, and really thinking about the history of the environmental movement and thinking about the history of the Black community and how we as a community have always cared for Mother Earth and cared for our environment. We may not have shown up in the same exact way as the main environmental narrative, but our history and our roots are in the earth. And so we really wanted to focus on all the different ways we show up in the environment and what that word means to us, and to reclaim that narrative that for some reason we as a Black community haven't been invested in the environment, because we have, and we go back really far with it. And then resilience, unfortunately, historically, we as a community have had to learn how to make amazing things, community, joy, art, with very, very little. And so we've become resilient. So not only does resilience capture our history, but I think it is so important, and we could not tell the future, but it is so important to where we are today of how do we stay resilient in the face of climate change? How do we personally stay resilient when we still are contending with so many different forms of harms in our environment and ourselves as a community? And how do we make our communities resilient to the crazy weather effects that we are seeing, from flooding to wildfires like never before? How do we build resilient communities?
I'd love to hear a little bit about the topics and the way that the event is being organized, some of the featured speakers. I don't know if that would be a Sharon question. I know you're helping, or well, I want to open it up. So anybody want to give us some highlights or what you're looking forward to in the agenda this year?
I can just share a little bit about some of the keynotes that I'm looking forward to the most. In particular, we have folks like Wawa Gafuru, from Black Girl Environmentalist, Dr. Carolyn Finney, who's author of Black Faces, White Spaces. I love, love, love her book. I'm so glad she'll be attending our conference. Dr. Reverend Yearwood, Hip Hop Caucus. He is always a great speaker, always a great time, always leaves lots of wisdom with the audience. And I'm probably forgetting somebody else, but Matt Brown, I believe, he's involved with Project Drawdown. And that's a project that I just learned about myself through this conference, being part of the planning committee. Oh, Matt Scott, thank you. Yes, Matt Scott. Project Drawdown, that project is working with how can we reduce the amount of greenhouse gas emissions going into our atmosphere, actually sequester or bring it back down into the soil, into the earth. That's really innovative, really forward thinking. So it's really well aligned with the mission of the organization. But those are some folks that I'm super excited to be engaged with throughout the week of the conference. I'll turn it over to anybody else with their thoughts.
Yeah, I would love to share that, you know, something that's really beautiful about this conference is it is accessible no matter where you are. So we have two virtual days. Our first 2 days on the 5th and the 6th are virtual. And then we have an in-person day on Friday the 7th, which is also going to be live streamed. And then we also have nature experiences in the DMV area and virtually on Saturday. So something that I'm really excited about, that all of these speakers are going to be able to be accessed by anybody, anywhere. We have a lot of students. This year, we've had our first student climate competition, which is really focusing on HBCU and Black students' perspectives on the environmental justice movement and what does reclamation and resilience look like within the Black community. We have students from Georgetown, Fisk, Bethel College. We have all of these students that are going to be able to share with us and having these youth perspectives on their vision. And then looking a little bit more locally, Through My Anacostia Eyes is a project that Carolyn Brewer and Xavier Brown have been working on with Anacostia High School students to really pinpoint their experiences with nature. And they went on various nature experiences over the past year. And Caroline worked with them to write about these different experiences. So they're also going to be sharing a lot about what they learned, how they felt, and also creatively what it feels like to be in nature for them and what it does for them. Some other speakers that I'd also like to highlight locally is a panel discussion on restorative community engagement with partners with Friends of Anacostia Park, Akima Price, Prince Ham from Making a Difference, Carol Gilmore, as well as LaShawn Jones are some great people that are just working on restorative community engagement and really talking about that intersection between environmental justice and other issues that the Black community continues to face, whether it's related to health, fitness, mental health, whatever it is, and really intersecting how parks are resilience hubs for communities. And I would also add the band that we're going to have. So alongside with all these great speakers, we're also going to have performances. So the performances by the Anacostia High School students, but also in person, we're going to have Sade's Collective, which is a local band of young artists that'll be in person with us, sharing, for us to have a good time together. We're going to jam out in between our conversations and our wisdom and our inspiration as well. And then I guess one more person I'll add is, although that we will have Reverend Yearwood, we're also going to have a private screening of the Hip Hop Caucus's Underwater Projects, which is about how the Norfolk community in Virginia has stayed resilient in the face of flooding. And we're also going to have a discussion on that as well.
That's great. That's a lot of names. Mentioned things that a couple of things that I'm sort of following and hoping to get a chance to learn more about. So appreciate that a lot. I'd love to hear from Mariah and Fred as well. What's your connection to the conference? What role will you be playing this year, and what are your highlights in general?
So for my part, I've been a past honoree at these conferences. I've attended as many of them as I could. It's, as the other speakers have said, a great forum, not only for people of color to hold forth on the issues and concerns that we experience quite differently sometimes from the rest of the population, but it was something I've noticed, because I'm a guy that also goes to lots and lots of conferences and speak at lots and lots of conferences. One thing that's unique and special, I think, about Taking Nature Black is I've noticed that people there are really talking about and working on very specific problems, often very community-based. At those other conferences, people are talking about issues. Issues are very generic, right? Climate change, stormwater, whatever. But they're kind of broad, as opposed to being very specifically focused on a community-based or a fence line or a front line kind of problem. And so it's a great community place where the vibes are very upbeat and very engaged, and where there's no presumption that people of color have to defer to a point of view about the environment that has been formed by someone else. In fact, it occurs to me that in Lydia's explanation of the origins of the name, essentially what they did over there was they decolonized the name. Right? And that's a battle we fight day in and day out as people of color in environmental movements, is decolonizing. In other words, changing the frame of reference or the reference point for these movements so that it encompasses the experiences that we have, which, like I said, often enough are very, very different or very specifically different than you would find in the general population, where people of color are an afterthought or we're chalked up as diversity or some label. Here, we're integral. We're very much stakeholders. And that's very refreshing and very engaging. And I always learn something. I always learn something new. at those conferences. At least that's my take on it.
And for me, this is Mariah. When I think about taking Nature Black and the work that Nature Forward is doing to cultivate these spaces, I think that they are the example. And this is the way in which that the environmental movement should go and should, you know, continue to go. I was very, I had a lot of gratitude when Lydia called me up and let me know I'd be honored as a regional environmental champion this year with Taking Nature Black. When I first, you know, got to know the work of Nature Forward, I think I started getting involved. I think I was on the second planning committee of this conference, and I've gotten to be a part of other, you know, kinds of planning committees. So it's, I have so much gratitude. And, you know, this is a tough time, you know, politically for all of us who are doing not just environmental work, but social justice work. And I think that in this moment, you know, post Black History Month, that this conference and this space to celebrate us and to bring us together is needed now more than ever. You know, a lot of the folks that I've gotten to work with in this industry over the years are not just my colleagues, these are my friends. We have personal and professional relationships with each other. And so I can't say enough about how important this moment is and all of these great conversations and all of the work that the planning committee is doing to bring us together. That is so needed and appreciated right now.
Thank you all for sharing that. I want to direct the listeners to go to natureforward.org to see the full program for the event. It runs from Wednesday, March 5th through, is it March 8th, Lydia? Give us the rundown. And I know some is in person and some is remote, so let us know. And then I'm going to take a quick break after you say that. So go ahead, Lydia.
I will be fast. March 5th through the 8th are the conference dates. Wednesday and Thursday, March 5th and 6th are virtual. Friday, March 7th is just the most beautiful place of community in person at the Silver Spring Civic Center. But that will also be live streamed. And then we're going to have nature immersive experiences on March 8th. We're going to be taking a walk with Soul Track at the Kenilworth Aquatic Gardens, going with Outdoor Afro to Patuxent Research Refuge, as well as going for a bird walk with DC Bird Alliance at Lake Artemisia. And we will even still have a virtual offering for all of our virtual attendees. Yoga in Nature with Kiona Gardner will be held virtually on March 8th as well. So whether you join us in person or remotely, we have the most for you.
Very well-rounded conference. I love that. Okay, folks, I'm going to take a quick break to remind our listeners that we are in Pledge Drive. We're raising money for the station that we love and cherish and don't want to lose. And so we have to step up and support. My goal is to get, of course, to raise $500 this hour. But it would really mean a lot if we could get maybe three folks to be sustainers to the station. That means that you set it up with a monthly donation. Ideally, not less than $10 a month. So that would then equal $120 a year. Of course, you can do any amount per month that you choose, but this way it becomes a steady stream of income to the station. And I know as somebody who runs an organization myself that this is really nice when you're able to, you know, say, okay, we have this number of people who've already set us into their monthly budget, and we don't have to ask them directly for money. We already know that they're supporting us. So if you could consider becoming a sustainer to the station, I'm going to give you all of the ways to donate. You can call 202-588-9739. Again, that's 202-588-9739. You can go online to wpfwfm.org. Under the donate, you can select the program that you are pledging under. Of course, we'd love for you to help us meet our goal by selecting Taking Action, but any of the programs that you support, you can select there. You can give by Cash App to $WPFWFM, or you can even text WPFWFM to the number 801801. So hopefully, I mean, we know with these types of things, right, the radio is free. All we do is turn it on, and it's easy for us to forget that it actually costs a lot of money. Even though the most of the people like myself who do the programs are volunteers, right? There's very few paid staff at the station. It's really rent and electric bills that make up the bulk of the expenses of running a radio station. And, you know, WPFW has been around for quite some time. I think, I don't want to get the number of years wrong. I think it's what we are like 50 something years now, I think, or about 50 years. And it's such an important institution. Like, we think about how much has changed in DC over that time, how many cultural institutions, Black-led cultural institutions have been lost. You know, WPFW to me is one that, you know, we just really need to fiercely defend and contribute and make sure that it is standing as long as necessary, which is for a long time. Because I can tell you, the corporate media, the traditional media is not dedicating time to these voices and these issues the way that WPFW is. And even among my guests, I have listeners and folks who even Fred mentioned to me before the show that he even had a show on WPFW at one point in the past. So it's definitely a community institution, and we really appreciate your support. Again, go to WPFWFM.org to give. And this hour, our goal is 500. Empower DC is going to cover half. So we'll pledge 250, and we really appreciate our supporters and listeners helping us make the other half. So I'm going to get back to my guests now, and actually wanted to play something that was part of the 2021 Taking Nature Black conference, and it's available on YouTube. This is a piece where you all were honoring Harriet Tubman. And I don't know, Lydia, if you're able to speak, if you want to say anything about this piece before I play it. Of course, the listeners will just hear the audio. If you want to see the imagery, you'd have to go online. But yeah, Lydia, is there anything you'd want to say about this, or should I just go ahead and play?
Well, I would say that the 2021 conference was held during an exceptional time. We were in the height of COVID. This conference, because we recognized the importance of creating spaces for Black and Brown people to celebrate, this was an all virtual conference that was 5 days. And part of what we do in every conference is incorporate all the things that define the Black community, from our legacy heroes like Harriet Tubman, who grew up in this and led the Underground Railroad in this region. And that's part of what this clip is honoring. So I'll go ahead and let you play it, Farisa.
Lift. Lift. Lift, lift.
When through the deep waters I cause thee to go, the rivers of sorrow shall not overflow. That's an excerpt from a 1787 hymn that was found in Harriet Tubman's biography by Sarah Bradford. And it seems to be perfect as the theme for her life of always having to go through deep waters and knowing that she would be protected, that the rivers of sorrow would not overflow.
For Harriet Tubman, her ability to be in nature was a matter of life and death for her and for the people she was leading north to freedom. Many people, if they've heard of Harriet Tubman, they know about her career as a conductor on the Underground Railroad. They may know less about her reliance on and her mastery of her environment, which is the thing that actually made her such a successful conductor on the Underground Railroad. A familiarity with the landscape, of how you moved through woods and forests, how you negotiated waterways, always with a mind to keep your eye focused north, on the North Star, and on freedom. And she was able to maneuver through those landscapes multiple times, bringing out somewhere between 75 to 100 folks and making sure that they enjoyed the same freedoms that she had taken for herself in 1849.
There were rocky roads. There were forests through which she had to find food by foraging. There were the moon and the stars and the sunsets and the sunrises that guided her. There were moss-covered trees that helped her find the right direction. There would be the calls of birds to learn and mimic so that she could secretly and intimately with nature control the traffic of her fellow freedom-seeking passengers.
The tools of the trade were, how do you manage in wooded areas? How do you manage moving across waterways? How do you continue to find your way north on trails when there are no signs and when you can't stop and ask for help because you are either an escaped slave or you are leading enslaved people to freedom? So there's no help necessarily that you can count on. You've got to be able to do this successfully by yourself. And that's what made Tubman such a great conductor on the Underground Railroad. She had that mastery of the natural environment. She understood how it worked and was able to make it work to her advantage.
Harriet's legacy is a legacy of crossing rivers, hiking fields and forest, understanding the life-giving properties of trees. It's a legacy of friendship and kinship with birds. It's a legacy of the magical illumination of the constellations. And it's a legacy of intellectual and spiritual demonstration. And it's a legacy that began right here in our region. Harriet Tubman was never afraid to cross a river. Her experience, her skill, her intelligence in nature are all reasons why we are honoring her with our 2021 Audubon Naturalist Society Taking Nature Black Legacy Environmental Champion Award.
So I wanted to share that because I think it does a good job of reminding us that environmentalism is not something new, that the connection to the earth, as you were talking about, Lydia, earlier, is something that is innate to Black and Brown people. And in this case, some of our, you know, sheroes that we know about, but we never really really looked into these aspects of how connected they, you know, so we hear and we learn about Harriet Tubman, for instance, but I don't think I've ever heard anybody else really speak to it from this angle, from this perspective. So I kind of wanted to highlight that. And it to me, it was also very significant in light of what we're dealing with right now with this attack against DEI, or so, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, as though this is somehow a bad thing. But your organization and this conference has really championed recentering the voices and perspectives of Black and Brown people in this environmental space. And so I wonder if you have any reflections on this work that you're doing sort of in the context of this attack on DEI today.
Yeah, I think that is a great question. And I think this attack on DEI makes our conference more critical than ever before. I think there is so much fear, and I have had so many conversations with people who are wondering, should we step back? We've done so much of this work. And some people don't have the luxury of even stepping back on serving Black and Brown communities. And I think it's more important than ever to have this space to solidify ourselves, because this work is incredibly important. to be clear, we have always been connected to the earth, to the environment, to clean air, to clean water, generation upon generation, back before anyone even was taken over the Atlantic Ocean. Our connection is to the earth. And it's decisions like these and times like these where it's so important to stand strong. When I think on the history of the Black community, it is one of fighting for better, fighting for justice, for freedom, for what is right, even when the laws of the land only saw us as 3/5 of a person, despite the labor that we have been doing, even when we could not share space with other people in a restaurant or use the same bathrooms. It was against the law. And we as a people stood up and advocated for better. And I think this conference enables us to be together in community, to strengthen and solidify ourselves, but also to refill our cups with joy and music and spoken word and all the things that make us us. It's not just environment, it's not just nature. It is finding ways, it's part of our community is finding that joy. Even in the darkest times, we find that joy. We create art, we create music, and we stand together and we choose to fight for freedom even when it seems like the world is going the opposite way. We choose to fight for freedom for ourselves and for everyone.
I like to say that Harriet Tubman was one of our OG naturalists, for sure. And, you know, when I think about her and I think about her work and her legacy, it was a form of resistance. Everybody, you know, throughout different movements, we all have our forms of resistance and what they look like. And being ourselves and throughout the course of this time will be a way for us to show our resistance. And I think taking Nature Black in this space can almost look like a form of resistance in itself, because we're creating the space and we're fostering a space of community and connection. But it's also, you know, a form of resistance of what's currently going on in the world. So I really encourage people to join as a form of resistance if that's what, you know, what you find power in, but also finding power in this community that is created here for people to share in history and share in this legacy that is already innate within, that we're already connected to.
Thank you both. And I'm going to ask Sharon and Mariah and Fred to also share some reflections on the importance of this space and this conference in this particular time. I do want to remind the listeners we are in Pledge Drive. I don't know if my tally is working because it says we haven't gotten any donations, but I imagine that people have given through Cash App and maybe texted, maybe through the text, and maybe my tally is not capturing those things. So I do want to just repeat to you all that our goal is 500, but Empower DC is going to cover half. So we would love your help reaching 250 from our listeners. We really appreciate you considering donations of any amount. Even consider becoming a sustaining member with a monthly gift of as little as $10 a month. You can call 202-588-9739, go to WPFWFM.org, give by Cash App to $WPFWFM, or text WPFWFM to 801-801. And, you know, I don't think I have to say this to our listeners because you already know and love WPFW, which is why you're listening. But obviously, media is something that's impacting our society a lot right now. And we have fewer and fewer media outlets that are, you know, not bought and sold by corporate interests. So we really do need to sustain this station and contribute to it, not just financially, but in other ways. I know there's folks that volunteer as program hosts and folks that volunteer on station boards and all of the ways that we can keep this a strong and persistent institution of truth and culture here in DC. We really need WPFW. So thank you for helping us keep it going. Fred, I'd love to hear some reflections from you. I know you've been in this work for some time, and you know, a lot of our work is long arc work, and it keeps going no matter what's going on in the White House. But I wonder, do you have any reflections on how we're at this moment that we're in right now?
Well, I do, actually. I really do believe that we have been being people of color, persistently undersold in general on this point. We are not just diversity, as much as those other colonized movements like to refer to us. We are actually stakeholders. We have a role to play. We have a deep interest in these movements and these resources that are commonly owned, that are public trust. We are as ingenious and as inventive and as committed and as passionate in some very particular ways that I think, quite frankly, these mainstream movements really need our energy. We brought good dividends in all occasions to virtually every area of endeavor in this culture and society, whether that's sports, entertainment, music, science, you name it. And yet the presumption somehow that we're no more than just diversity is really shocking. It's actually an insult, right? I mean, we stand not just on the shoulders of, you know, Rachel Carson and the Murrays and J. Ding Darling. We have heroes and champions and people of our own as well who have much to contribute. I am not a person who would lobby for all Black movements of any sort, because I do think these are collective endeavors that provide a great forum for us to collaborate and to participate. But I do believe that we cannot be asterisks and footnotes and afterthoughts when it comes to discussing the future of this planet. And the very idea that we can save this planet using only the energy from the prime players and the rest of us are just diversity. We stand around and just be diverse. What is that? It's nuts. So we really have to rethink how these movements function, right? As much as I see these various other movements struggling to find ways to be more inclusive, it's not hard. They have to change. It's just that simple. And if they don't want to, I think they should admit it. But I think that moderates their voice. Right. If you just speak for whom you speak for, you need to sit down and shut up when people of color have something to say on our own behalf as it relates to our earthly home, our environment, and the solutions to problems that we experience as much, if not more, in some instances than others. That's on record. We shouldn't have to relitigate that in the current political spectrum. That's on record. EPA knows it. The White House knows it. It's an open secret that we have very different consortium with the environment than do people who do so on the basis of white privilege. It's as simple as that. So it's a call, I think. These conferences don't exclude everyone. They welcome and embrace everyone. And that's the point. These are much better movements to the extent they have a little bit of everybody in them. I think that's exciting energy. Great stuff. And I really encourage you to get involved, to fight for what's right in your own community on behalf of your own environment. To come to the conference, by all means, and start as many of these as possible. Start some other conferences. We need plenty more conferences just like this one, or that amplify these types of ideas.
Thanks, Fred. I really appreciate that. And you did say one thing I wanted to highlight, that this is not a Black and Brown only space. Anyone can come to this conference, sure. But it is a Black and Brown centered space in terms of, like Fred was saying, not an asterisk, right? Not an afterthought. But very centered. And I wonder, Mariah and Sharon, if you want to join in.
Yeah, I really like what Jemani said about, you know, this being a space of resistance, taking nature Black. We've always had Blackness in nature. And, you know, myself and others, you know, environmental professionals have unexpectedly lost our, you know, positions during these times. And it's an opportunity, I think, to inspire and to create and to innovate. Oftentimes, you know, when it comes to these resistance movements, as Lydia said, we've always been able to do a lot with a little, and also, you know, celebrate our culture along the way. When it comes to some of the, you know, federal policies policies and some of the executive orders and those actions that I've seen and reading, you know, that dialogue and in reading through those policies, a lot of the anti-DEI rhetoric is actually as a result of the environmental justice work that was led by the Biden administration through Justice 40. And so, you know, the Justice 40 initiative was, you know, historic. It provided historic investments and said, you know, we all need to be investing at least 40% of, you know, funding and technical assistance into disenfranchised and EJ communities across the country. And it really forced agencies to look inward and to look at where's your money going, where is it not going, and, you know, what is your programming, you know, looking at. And so, you know, when we're talking about environmental justice, when we're talking about disenfranchisement of, you know, communities, you know, this is all related to, you know, diversity as well. And so, you know, I think that there are some current, you know, lessons learned that, you know, we can continue to take at the state level. We have had, you know, they're coming after the 1994 environmental justice executive order, right? So these are our, you know, the bedrock, you know, protections that we have had, but a lot of those things have been done through executive order. So I think, you know, this is a time to inspire, create, you know, get experts together and really think about how can we put these policies in statute? How can we put these policies in law to, you know, continue to protect ourselves? So I'm excited to come together and to continue to disrupt the system with everybody.
Thanks, Mariah.
Now to jump in really quick as we close, I wanted to echo Mariah's thoughts. And I was thinking as she was speaking, my background has also been in state and federal and academia. But I think this conference is so beautiful because it does blend so many different folks from different sectors, and everyone is thinking so creatively, innovatively, and collaboratively. I love that just in my 2 years of being involved with this conference, I've made so many connections that have lasted me the 2 years between conferences. And we've worked together, we've held events together, and I love that this is a space to propose and enact creative solutions to the problems we're facing today.
Yeah, I think this is an important opportunity for fellowship. And yes, the work is continuing. It doesn't matter what roadblocks folks are trying to put in the way. Jumaane, I'd love to have you repeat all the details that you want the listeners to take home with them before we close out.
Yes, please do not forget to please grab your ticket, share widely with somebody with everybody about Taking Nature Black 2025 Reclamation and Resilience. You can find more details on natureforward.org/takingnatureblack. We will be there virtually and in person March 5th through 8th with different experiences. For you to feel inspired, feel joy, and celebrate each other and celebrate the beauty of Blackness as we're taking Nature Black at our 2025 conference together. Thank you so much for having us, Parisa, and thank you for this opportunity to share more about this wonderful experience that we hope everybody can delight in soon. Mm-hmm.
And you guys are welcome back anytime. Appreciate you coming on today. I don't think we said it, but the conference is 100% free, correct? Or is there a registration?
There definitely is a registration.
Okay.
And we do have various ticket prices. But, you know, Parisa, one thing that we always have pledged in bringing this conference is making it accessible to anyone. So if people cannot afford the ticket prices where they are, whether they're virtual or in person, all they have to do is reach out to the email on the website. And we are happy to work with them to make this conference accessible to them wherever they are.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad we said that then. If you go online and you see the ticket cost and it's too, you know, something you can't make happen, please do reach out to the organizers. Let me know if you need help connecting. We want everybody to be able to participate. So thank you guys again. I'm excited to participate. And so I'm going to have to plan out my schedule of how I'm going to show up to different things. I want to thank again the listeners of WPFW for supporting the station during the pledge drive. It's not too late to continue to support Taking Action and the other programs that are on the station. Again, go to WPFWFM.org or call 202-588-9739. And please stay tuned for the next great program on today is Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. But first, the news.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. More than 1,000 people used President's Day as a day to protest the current president of the United States, Donald Trump, and one of his right-hand men, Elon Musk. According to organizers, the protests held at the U.S. Capitol in D.C. were against, quote, anti-democratic and illegal actions of the Trump administration and its allies. The protesters called their demonstration No King's Day, and one participant, a Georgia resident named Georgina Hall, said, and I quote, "We don't need a king. We really need a government for the people," end quote. Another protester from Richmond, Virginia, referenced the downsizing of the federal workforce and said that, quote, "Elon Musk is not an elected official, but is doing a lot of damage to our departments that are important," end quote. Musk, who is the richest person in the world, has been doing work with the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, which has swept through federal agencies since Trump's inauguration. However, the White House said in a statement that Musk is just a senior advisor to Trump, not an employee of DOGE, and therefore he has no authority to make government decisions himself. Today, Hamas said that it will release more hostages, some living and some deceased, in the coming days. On Thursday, they said they will release the dead bodies of four Israeli hostages, including the two youngest people held by the group, Kafir and Ariel Bibas. The Bibas parents had been holding out hope for their little ones, but this hostage release announcement is proof that their children, who were just 9 months and 4 years old respectively when they were kidnapped in October 2023, are in fact deceased. Hamas will also release six living hostages on Saturday instead of the three that had been expected. Four additional slain hostages are expected to be handed over to Israel next week. A spokesperson for the Israeli Hostage Families Forum said the families of all the hostages set for release, whether alive or deceased, have been notified. Canadian authorities are investigating a plane's crash landing yesterday at Toronto Pearson Airport, which is the country's largest airline. The Delta flight, which came from Minneapolis, was attempting to land amid strong winds and drifting snow when it crashed and flipped over the tarmac, finally coming to a rest with its belly up and at least one wing shorn off. Thankfully, no one was killed, and all 80 people aboard were evacuated. However, at least 18 of them suffered injuries, some of them critical, but not life-threatening. One passenger said that nothing seemed out of the ordinary when the plane was in its final descent, but as soon as the wheels hit the ground, things changed. And he said, and I quote, "The next thing I know, we're sideways." This crash is the latest in a series of accidents this year that has spread anxiety among air travelers and brought on sharp criticism of American aviation regulators. To the D.C. area, Maryland Governor Wes Moore has announced his endorsement for the Prince George's County, Maryland executive position, a role that Angela Alsobrooks vacated in December to join the Senate. The governor is endorsing state's attorney Aisha Braveboy, who already had the support of three current members of the county council. Braveboy was one of the first people to endorse Wes Moore in his 2022 run for governor, and his backing may be the most important in the state, according to sources. Explaining his endorsement, Governor Moore said in part, and I quote, "As governor, I have had the privilege of working together with Aisha Braveboy, and I have seen her leadership up close. The combination of her public and private sector experience, her track record of delivering results in office, and her forward-facing vision to lead as the next county executive is what inspired my decision," end quote. In today's weather, it's currently about 32 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York,